All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Bob Gould.
And welcome once again to Veterans Radio, another edition of Veterans Radio coming to you live from our flagship station right here in the Garden Spot of Michigan, Ann Arbor, home of the maize and the blue. And of course, we're all waiting for new, but we're not going to talk about that because we got a great program today. We're going to be talking with the Humana folks regarding, regarding their program for hiring veterans, and we're also going to have our former partner who was killed 4 years ago, Gary Lilly. He will be coming to us with an encore performance, one of his it's just great to hear his voice, Arlington. And I chose Arlington. It's been pre-recorded, obviously, but I chose that. Something about the end of the year, and I think it's very appropriate. So we're here at WHAM. We're going to be very okay. Derek's looking at me, right? We're getting ready. I'll tell you what. Let me do a couple of things while he's handling this. There's going to be a National Veterans Golden Age Games in July in Detroit, Michigan. That's open to veterans 55 and older who are enrolled in the VA healthcare plan. There's going to be all health care. They get their health care at the VA. There we go. And the you need to register first. So you go to the VA or call the VA and register for the Veterans Golden Age Games. The competitions include air rifle, badminton, boccia, that must be bocce ball, bowling, cycling, field, discus, shot and javelin, golf, horseshoes, nine ball, power walk, shuffleboard, swimming, table tennis, and track. Wow. That's going to be coming to you in July, and I want to see a lot of veterans sign up for this. Let's have a good, and you don't have to be from Detroit or Ann Arbor or Ypsilanti or that school, Lansing, right? You don't have to be there either. No, you can be from anywhere in Michigan. Let's just show up in July. But remember, you got to register. So you go to the VA. You go to your local VA or veteransgoldenagegames.va.gov. That, once again, it's veteransgoldenagegames.va.gov. We'll be right back right after this very important message, and we'll begin with Arlington, your host, Gary Lilly. Welcome home, we here at Veterans Radio. Welcome home, troops that have returned from service around the world and have returned to our country. But we're going to step aside a little bit from the usual and just take a moment or two on this special day that we here at Veterans Radio want to welcome home those that welcome home. That includes service organizations such as the Vietnam Veterans of America, the VFW, Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, Military Order of the Purple Heart, etc. And also, for some of the groups, some of the civilian groups, the Patriot Riders, the various high school bands, the Bangor Main Greeters, Donut Dollies, the Donut Girls, they've all provided a welcome home to those who have given us so much. So here at Veterans Radio, we want to say to the moms and dads, brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, friends and neighbors, and from all Americans around the world, welcome home.
In my hometown, they gave me this plot of land me and some other men for a job well done. There's a big white house, it's on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, we're proud of your son. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. I remember that.
That was Trace Adkins, song Arlington from his Greatest Hits CD, Greatest Hits 2. We'll play a little bit more of it. It's a, to me, it's a very moving song and a very meaningful song. And another person that it's meaningful to is Michael Patterson. Michael, welcome to Veterans Radio. Tell us who you are and what you do.
Well, good morning, Gary. Thanks for having me on this morning. And we hope that you guys are enjoying the Memorial Day weekend and hopefully that all of your listeners are celebrating Memorial Day as it should be, remembering those who've come before us and who've served. But again, as you mentioned, my name is Michael Patterson. I'm the web's master and originator of the Arlington National Cemetery website, which is my own personal website. It doesn't belong to the government or to the Army. I do it as a gift to America, if you will.
They have their own website, which is very, is it a, the identical name, only .org? Or
yeah, yes, it
tell
is,
us
Gary.
What your website is before we get...
ours is www.arlingtoncemetery.net and also arlingtoncemetery.com.
Michael, you started off with a very small website, correct?
Well, I did, Gary. Back in 1996, we started off with a very humble, very small 10-page website.
And how large is it now?
It's now running about 35,000 pages.
I don't think I could go through it in my lifetime. I don't know how you found time to do it. But tell us, you got interested in it because your dad was in the military. You're now retired, so he was in World War II, Korea, and the start of Vietnam. Is that correct?
Yes, he was. And he retired in 1965. He was a lifetime military officer. And through that, you know, I gained a lot of interest in military history and American history for sure. And, you know, because of his affiliation with the military, we had been down in the D.C. area a number of times. And, of course, you know, when you visit Washington, D.C., you know, the metro area, Arlington National Cemetery is certainly a place that one needs to visit.
That's such a solemn spot. And every time I walk through there, it just hits me. I look at these tombstones and I think, the stories here, the stories that have never been told. It's sacred to me. How large is Arlington?
Arlington Cemetery right now is 660 acres. The good news is that there's been some additional property ceded to Arlington from adjoining military organizations. So we'll be adding about 80 acres to the cemetery, which will keep it alive certainly beyond 2060. Is an active cemetery.
And how many are buried there?
Well, right now there's pushing around 300,000.
How much more room will they have? How many more can it take?
Well, again, at the present burial rate, which is around between 27 and 30 a day, they'll be able to continue right up until 2060. It's estimated at this point.
Okay, so leave it up to the people to do the math. Now, who qualifies to be buried there?
Well, it's the criteria there has become very restricted following President Kennedy being buried there. Arlington became a very popular burial site, as you could imagine. So Congress passed some very severe restrictions following that time. Right now, anyone who dies on active duty, of course, is eligible. Retired military who are receiving retirement pay from the military are eligible, and certain other persons who receive certain military honors. of course, Medal of Honor recipients, Silver Star recipients, and, of course, Purple Heart recipients are immediately eligible.
So
but there are all sorts of other criteria. You know, we do have that on the website. It goes on and on for several pages because there are some exceptions, of course.
So if somebody wants to know whether or not they or a loved one qualifies, they can go to your website.
Absolutely, they can.
Okay, terrific. What a service. How did Arlington get started and when?
Well, it was a very interesting story. It actually, Arlington, as you probably know, was in the family of Robert E. Lee, who became the Confederate general. But in 1862, after the Civil War had started, the United States Congress passed a tax act against the states that were in rebellion, the southern states. And if those taxes weren't paid, certain properties were seized, and one of those was the Arlington estate. And they filed suit against the Arlington estate in the amount of $92.07 in taxes plus penalties. And, of course, General Lee could not pass over the line to pay the taxes, so the United States government seized the property in 1862 for what they categorized as war, military, charitable, and educational purposes. And it didn't become a cemetery until 1864, when Brigadier General Montgomery Meigs, who was the Quartermaster General of the Union Army at that time, and who was a person who harbored a strong jealousy for Robert E. Lee for turning against the Union and joining the Confederacy, recommended to President Lincoln that they establish a cemetery on the grounds, you know, principally to provide additional burial space, but secondarily to prevent General Lee or his family from ever living in the estate again. And actually, before the cemetery was actually established in June 1864, on May 13, 1864, the first burial took place, who was a Private William Chrisman from a Pennsylvania infantry regiment who had died in a Washington hospital.
That's amazing to me that you would know, or that history would know, the very first person to be buried at Arlington. I'd have never guessed we would know that. And were the Union soldiers buried close to the mansion, did I understand?
Yes, they were. They were buried in what was Mrs. Lee's Rose Garden, right near the mansion. And Meigs, General Meigs, who we mentioned before, actually personally supervised it because he wanted them buried so close to the mansion that it would never become a private home again.
True. Tell us the connection or the history of Mrs. Lee.
Well, Mrs. Lee actually owned a property. It wasn't actually General Lee's property. Her father, George Washington Park Custis, was the adopted son of George Washington, which many people don't know. When he died, the property went to Mrs. Lee, and she and raised her family there for many, many years while her husband was in the United States Army serving out west. He came back to the property at some point in time after George Washington Park Custis died, and he's actually buried with his wife on the property. So they were actually the first burials, although they were civilians. They were buried on the estate well before it was a cemetery. And
now the mansion is still there.
Yes, it is. It's called Arlington House, or it's sometimes called the Custis Lee Mansion.
And what do you see when you're standing there, and what is the house used for now?
It's used now as it's now called the Robert E. Lee National Memorial, and it's been restored to the way it looked in the 1860s. It has much of the original furniture in it, and it's a very beautiful home.
And when you stand on the porch, you look out over.
Well, immediately if you look out, you can look down, and right down the hill from that is the John F. Kennedy burial site. The Robert F. Kennedy burial site, and right in the front yard is where General Phil Sheridan from the Civil War is buried.
And then you look out and you see the graves, and then in the distance you see the Potomac. And
you see the Potomac, and you can see Washington, D.C. off in the distance.
And off to the right would be the Pentagon.
Yes, absolutely, and you can see the U.S. Capitol, you can see the Washington Monument. It's just an absolutely beautiful sight.
It's stunning. I've been there, and I've wandered around. When you wander around, you see a lot of monuments. You see a lot of plaques of dedication. Can you tell us about that and tell us who qualifies to be able to put a plaque there?
Well, many, many very groups, military groups principally, obviously, of course, have applied to Arlington and over the years to have plaques placed in memory of their groups. There are very groups such as the Navy Seabees, of course, have a monument right outside the gates of Arlington on Memorial Drive.
One that I'm near and dear to my heart.
I knew it would be. Large. That's why I wanted to mention that, Gary, because I know that that's very close to you. But again, there are literally hundreds, if I wouldn't say thousands, but there are many hundred memorials that have been placed by various military and veterans groups throughout the cemetery. And they're anything from trees with plaques below them to very large memorials. There's going back into the late 1890s, early 1900s, there's the Spanish-American War Memorial. There's the Rough Riders Memorial. And then, of course, the largest one in the cemetery is the USS Maine Memorial, which was established, you know, from the USS Maine being sunk in Havana Harbor, which started the Spanish-American War. And in the early 1900s, the mast of the USS Maine was brought to Arlington and placed above the graves of many of the sailors that were lost above on the USS Maine.
Do I remember hearing something about the remains of people being in that mast, or is it another monument that I'm thinking
of? No, you're absolutely correct. Over the years, Manuel Quezon, who was the president of the Philippines during World War II, was in exile in Washington and died in Washington. And his body was kept in the base of the USS Maine until the war was over, and eventually his body was returned to the Philippines. Another interesting thing is Ignace Jan Paderewski, the president of Poland, at the beginning of World War II, died in the United States in 1941, and he laid in state in the base of the USS Maine until the administration of the first President Bush, when his body was finally returned to Poland once Poland was declared free again.
That was something that caught me by surprise, is that there are different people from different nationalities. The person that you mentioned, that is not the same person that there's a statue in Detroit. I think the person in Detroit was a Revolutionary War general. Is that correct?
Yes, but he was not in Arlington.
Okay.
But, you know, once you've mentioned it, there are just numbers of foreign persons who are buried in Arlington. It sometimes surprises a lot of folks. The most recent one, of course, was an Iraqi Air Force captain who was killed on a mission with several American military people. And their remains could not be individually identified because they were killed in a plane crash. And he is buried in Section 60, where most of the casualties from Iraq are buried. And his name is Ali Hassam Abbas Arubai, and he was, again, an Iraqi Air Force captain.
In fact, there's a number of graves, are there not, where there are more than one person because of the way the casualty took place? There was no separating them? Is that correct?
Absolutely. There are very many group burials at Arlington. And again, most of them, or a lot of them, result from World War II. And they're still finding, you know, remains of World War II casualties, mostly from aircraft accidents and shootdowns, a lot of them from New Guinea, you know, as late as just this year, where they're finding aircrew remains, and they're burying them as a group burial in Arlington.
Who's getting buried the most right now? Is it veterans or is it active duty?
Well, right now it's veterans, for sure, because we're losing so many of our World War II veterans, and they certainly were, as Tom Brokaw wrote in his book, The Greatest Generation, and we're losing them at an alarming rate. That will, I think, continue to be the case because of the way we're losing them, and they're aging out on us, and we're losing so many of them that if you look at the roster of the funerals taking place every day, that's we're losing the veterans.
We're, and as a matter of fact, it surprises many people to know that per capita, Vietnam vets are dying at just about the double the rate per capita as World War II vets.
Yes, they are, and obviously at a much younger age.
Right. I keep looking at the clock, the calendar every day and checking my time.
Don't do that, Gary. We need you to continue on with this fine program. No,
this
really
program
do.
Keeps me going, believe it or not. Well, at any rate, you get a lot of visitors. How many visitors a year do you get at Arlington?
About 4 million people a year visit through there, and it's one of it's the most visited cemetery in America, probably in the world. And you know, when you've been down there a number of times, right. And I'm there quite frequently, and it varies from school groups to veterans groups to. I was just down there 2 weeks ago, and they had police officers from all over the country that were in for the Police Officers Memorial, which is held in Washington D.C. annually. And they were just thousands of police officers in the district, and most of those groups came to Arlington, and they were all in their uniforms, and they had all come to the Tomb of the Unknowns to witness the changing of the guard by the 3rd Infantry Division, which is the old guard.
And when we come back, we're going to be in the third segment. We're going to be talking about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. And in the next segment, I want you to take us through a funeral and how it takes place there at Arlington Cemetery. We're talking to Michael Patterson on Veterans Radio. Michael Patterson maintains his own private website on Arlington National Cemetery, and it's arlingtoncemetery.net and arlingtoncemetery.com. The time is roaring past. We're going into our first break. We'll be right back on Veterans Radio.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them.
Hospital apprentice Fred McGuire, after emptying his rifle, used it as a club. Details after this.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy?
For freedom.
Freedom of religion.
What America stands for.
Why do I serve in the U.S. Navy? For honor.
Everybody. And watch out for everybody.
Freedom to vote.
Democracy.
Freedom to go outside and play with my kids.
I joined the Navy to serve my country.
Every freedom that we have.
The right to raise our kids in peace.
My little brother.
My wife.
My kids.
Our children's children.
The United States Navy.
It's not for ourselves alone that we serve.
While attached to the USS Pampang, McGuire was one of a shore party moving into Captain Mundang, Philippine Islands, on the morning of 24 September 1911. Ordered to take station within 100 yards of a group of huts close to the trail, McGuire advanced and stood guard as the leader and his scout party first searched the surrounding deep grasses, then moved into the open area before the huts. Instantly, the enemy opened point-blank fire on the exposed men, and approximately 20 enemy charged the small group from inside the huts and from other concealed positions. McGuire, responding to the calls for help, was one of the first on the scene. After emptying his rifle into the attackers, he closed in with his rifle, using it as a club to wage fierce battle until his comrades arrived on the field, when he rallied to the aid of his dying leader and other wounded. Although himself wounded, McGuire ministered tirelessly and efficiently to those who had been struck down, thereby saving the lives of two who otherwise might have succumbed to enemy-inflicted wounds.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
I remember Daddy brought me here when I was 8. We searched all day to find out where my granddad lay. And when we finally found that cross, he said, "Son, this is what it costs to keep us free." Now here I am, 1,000 stones away from him. He recognized me on the first day I came in, and it gave me a chill when he clicked his heels and saluted me. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best of company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace. I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington.
And that's that beautiful song, Arlington, that can be found on the CD, Trace Adkins' Greatest Hits, number 2. Thank you, Trace Adkins. We're with Michael Patterson on Veterans Radio, coming to you on the Ave Maria Radio Network. The offices here are in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I said that incorrectly. Michael Patterson of Arlington Cemetery .com and .net. You know what? I got a little scattered there because I'm looking at my notes, and I wanted to have you take me through a funeral that takes place. And I'm looking at the names James Linton Heward, who is someone I knew from Dearborn, Michigan, back in the teenage days, prior to the service. James Linton Heward was an F-4 pilot who went down on July 12, 1972, up in the north, and then his remains were found and returned, and he was buried in 1997. Very, very emotional day, and I was thinking about that, and I was getting a little bit emotional about it again. Michael Patterson, take us through the burial at one of those at the Arlington Cemetery, and I'm going to let you talk till I get my thoughts together.
That's okay, Gary. I can understand. You know, when you attend a funeral at Arlington Cemetery, it's unlike anything that you'll ever experience. There are two types of funeral services that take place there. The most common one is called Standard Military Honors, and that's available to any enlisted service member or any officer. And that consists of a 6-man body bearer detail, a firing party which fires a 3-rifle volley, and that's sometimes confused with a 21-gun salute, which it's not. There's a bugler to play taps, and then there's, of course, a chaplain from the deceased military service. The body bearers carry the flag-draped casket to the grave, hold the flag over the casket while the chaplain says some appropriate words. And then following the committal service, the firing party is called to attention, fires the 3-rifle volley, and then the bugler plays taps, which to my mind is just always just awesome. It just makes the hair stand up on your back of your neck. The body bearers fold the flag, and then that's presented to the next of kin by the officer that's conducting the services. Now, on the other hand, Arlington's the only cemetery in the world that offers on a regular basis a full military honors funeral, available at the family's request to officers and warrant officers. Now, a full honors service consists of a procession to the gravesite with a horse-drawn caisson, a marching band, a marching escort of troops, a 4-man color guard. The chaplain joins the procession as well in front of the caisson and behind the escort band and color guard. Once at the gravesite, the service is pretty much identical to the standard services, with the exception that the band plays while the casket is taken to the grave and the flag's being folded. It's just an absolutely breathtaking and emotional and absolutely symbolic farewell to an American fighting man. The interesting thing that happens at Arlington as well, and people of our era may remember this from John F. Kennedy's funeral, is the riderless horse. And that is for officers who are a colonel or above, where the riderless horse follows the caisson. And that's it's called the Capron horse. And it's a horse with no rider, of course. And the boots are reversed in the stirrups, you know, which means that the rider will no longer ride his horse. And when you see that happen at Arlington, it absolutely takes your breath away.
That was the funeral type of funeral they had for Jim Heward.
Absolutely. Well,
I'm the Vietnam Veterans of America Chapter 310 representative at the Vietnam Veterans of America Michigan State Council, where we get the committee reports, one of them always being the POW-MIA report. And it hit me like a bolt of lightning. I was taking the notes when the man was giving his report, and he said the remains of James Linton Heward from Dearborn, Michigan, have been returned, and my my head snapped back to I know, and my eyes filled with tears, and I continued to take the notes, although I had a hard time seeing the paper, and tears were dropping on the paper. And then the funeral took place at Arlington. A good friend and I drove out there, and there's first the chapel where they have the service, and Jim's sons were there, and one of them was played on the little baby grand piano inside the chapel. And what I remember is he played How Great Thou Art, and it was so stirring, the way he played it. I'd never heard it like that before, and the hair stands up just thinking about it. And when they carried Jim out and put him on the caisson, and riderless horse, and then the band and the color guard, one of them carrying the MIA flag, there were a lot of Vietnam vets from Dearborn, Michigan, went out there, my friend and I amongst them. And as we walked, I don't know if it was a half mile or three quarters of a mile, winding through the cemetery, gradually the Vietnam vets stopped talking. They were in a group, fell into columns of two, fell into step, and then silently marched. And I just looked around and I said to my friend, I am so proud to be a part of this small band of brothers, this small elite group. And as we walked looking at these rows of crosses, it was very emotional. Later on, they had at the gravesite itself, the Air Force flew the missing man formation. The four planes come flying over and one peels off before it hits the Arlington. And so only the three fly over in the missing man formation. Is the missing man formation something that you see very often there?
Yes, you do, because, you know, most of the Marine aviators, Naval aviators, Air Force aviators, who are combat aviators, their families request that quite frequently, and it is absolutely, Gary, a stirring, stirring thing to see. And it's played out so well, because you can imagine that it has to happen with such technical preciseness, the way it happens during the course of the funeral, but it just absolutely takes your breath away.
And for the 4 million visitors that are visiting when that type of a funeral takes place, it's worth the admission. And there's no price of admission. This is a free visit, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this cemetery belongs to the American people, as does my website. I mean, this is an American tradition. This is a national cemetery. It belongs to you. It belongs to me. It belongs to all of those 4 million people who come and visit, and it belongs to the millions of people who come and visit it on the website every year.
I can't recommend your website enough. There is so much in there, historical photographs, everything from the how do I do it, who qualifies, to the stories of the people, and it's just amazing. I spent hours browsing through it, getting ready for the show. And speaking of that, this segment is almost over. You're listening to Michael Patterson, who has the most astounding website on Arlington National Cemetery. We'll give that address again coming out of this next break. In the next break, Michael, we're going to be talking about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Old Guard, and I'd like you to give us some of the history of that wreath laying. I was honored to lay a wreath one Memorial Day, and you're listening to the Veterans Radio Network, coming to you from Ave Maria Radio. We'll be right back.
We're thankful for those, thankful for the things we've done. We can rest in peace, 'cause we are the chosen ones. We made it to Arlington. Yeah, dust to dust, don't cry for us. We made it to Arlington.
And we're back on Veterans Radio again. That's Trace Adkins' song Arlington. It can be found on his Greatest Hits Part 2 CD. I love it. We're with Michael Patterson talking about the Arlington National Cemetery. He's got the fabulous website on it. We'll repeat it again later. Right now, I'd like to have you tell us about the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier, the Old Guard, the changing of the guard. Give us a bit of a history on that, if you would, please.
I'd be glad to, Gary. Well, you know, the Tomb of the Unknowns is the second most visited place in Arlington National Cemetery. Most of the visitors who come go immediately to John F. Kennedy's gravesite, but the place to me, the center point of the cemetery, is the Tomb of the Unknowns. It was established in 1921 when a unknown from World War I was selected and interred, you know, right behind the Memorial Amphitheater at Arlington. In 1958, he was joined by unknowns from World War II and Korea. And then in 1998, there was a Vietnam unknown chosen. And I mention that because I know that that's near and dear to your heart. And eventually, the Vietnam unknown was identified and removed from the tomb. And that was Air Force First Lieutenant Michael Joseph Blassie. And they were able to identify him through mitochondrial DNA. And at his family's request, he was removed, and he was brought home to Jefferson Barracks National Cemetery near his home in Missouri. And he was certainly an American hero as well. But, you know, he was brought back to his home. But the Tomb of the Unknowns has been guarded 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, by the 3rd United States Infantry, who is commonly referred to as the Old Guard. They earned that name in the Mexican War back in the 1800s by the way that they participated in that war. And they are the oldest continuous military organization in the United States Army, and they are the only military unit that's authorized to have bayonets on their rifles at all times. But these are guys who are specially trained, obviously. They are the honor guard of the United States Army.
How are they selected?
They are selected on military bearing, on intelligence, on dedication to duty. There's height and weight restrictions. They have to have a 28-inch waist, for instance, which I haven't seen since I think I was 10 years old. But these guys are out there 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, in rain, in snow, in horrible weather, in heat.
I understand that during a storm a few years ago, a blizzard that was so bad, they were authorized to not do their guarding and turned it down, and they stayed out there anyway.
Yes, they do. If you've been there, Gary, and I know you have.
I have.
There's a little booth off to the side.
Right.
And when the snow piles up, they will retreat to that booth and stay at attention while the area that they march on is cleaned, and then they resume their march. They are the most dedicated, wonderful young men and women. There have been 3 tomb guards who are females that you'll ever know. And as far as the tomb itself, it's having some issues right now because of some cracks that have formed. And there are discussions underway whether the tomb should be replaced, at least the cap, the top of it that we're all familiar with,
right,
or whether it should be repaired. And there have been issues over the years where it has been attempted to repair it.
I'm glad they're not just jumping into it and doing something that there's...
I'm glad they're not either. Congress is stuck their hand into it and said, listen, let's you know, sit back and let's research this a little bit.
Well,
but I think there's a couple of very poignant things about the tomb, and one is the inscription which sits on the front of it, which I think is pretty familiar to all of our veterans friends out there, and it says merely, here rests in honor, glory, an American soldier known but to God. And that is the truth. I mean, this is simply an American soldier. And, you know, whether... Like yourself, if you're a CB or you're a sailor or a Marine or a Coast Guardsman or an airman, you know, to be called an American soldier is certainly something that you can be proud of.
Oh.
And if I could, just for a second, I'd like to read to you the Sentinel's Creed, if I could.
Please do.
And it says, my dedication to this sacred duty is total and wholehearted. In the responsibility bestowed on me, never will I falter. With the dignity and perseverance, my standard will remain perfection. Through the years of diligence and praise and the discomfort of the elements, I will walk my tour in humble reverence to the best of my ability. It is he who commands the respect I protect, his bravery that made us so proud. Surrounded by well-meaning crowds by day, alone in the thoughtful peace of night, this soldier will in honored glory rest under my eternal vigilance. And let me tell you what, these guys take that so seriously.
And this is an oath they all take.
They all take. And one of the most cherished awards that as an Army soldier you can earn is the Honor Guard badge. And, you know, you have to pass some very stringent requirements to earn that. And not even all of the old guard guys who guard the tomb earn that. And
you have to be outstanding amongst the outstanding.
You absolutely have to be. And once you earn that, you can wear that on your uniform no matter where you go or whatever assignment you go to after you've served at the tomb. It's very special.
If the folks out there have not seen the changing of the guard at Arlington National Cemetery, that's something that you must do before you leave this planet Earth. The people there, you look at these young people and you say, this country is good. This country is good. I don't care what anybody says.
Well, if I could throw sort of a semi-political thing in, you know, from what Michelle Obama said, how could you look at that and not be proud to be an American?
Impossible.
Impossible indeed.
And so when it comes to laying the wreath, who is qualified to lay the wreath? We've got, just a little over a minute left.
Well, you know, obviously, any military group, veterans groups, on the website I have a link where you can get information on that. You can write in on your group's letterhead and, you know, request a date. But, you know, you should request a couple of dates because, you know, it is quite a popular thing. But you'll send into to the cemetery. There's people who handle requests and do the scheduling.
And that's on your website, correct?
It absolutely is. There's the link right to it on the front page.
As I mentioned earlier, that my Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, one of the members wrote in, requested that, and as the president that year, I had the honor of laying the wreath. Now, we've come to the end of the show, Michael. I can't believe it.
And I can't either, Gary. It's been really a pleasure.
Thank you so much for being on. We want to thank you for listening in on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Gary. We miss you very much. Next, we're going to hear from Humana. Dale had a chance to talk with Ken Schultz, one of our sponsors, Humana, about their veterans hiring program and Humana's Medicare Advantage programs. Take it away, Derek.
Hi, this is Dale Thronberry with Veterans Radio, and today we're talking with Ken Schultz, who's a consultant with Humana Insurance. Welcome to Veterans Radio, Ken.
Well, thank you very much, Dale, and I appreciate the invitation.
Well, listen, before we start, I wanted to ask you about Humana's military connections. I know Humana is a big supporter of our military service members and veterans. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Be proud to. Large and small. Locally, we have markets that have clothing drives for homeless veterans. Nationally, we are one of the TRICARE providers, and that's providing health plans to 6 million military service members and their family. Locally, and I should say corporation-wide, we had an initiative back in 2011 where we decided we were going to hire 1,000 veterans and or their spouses. And we set a goal to hire that 1,000 veterans by 2013. Well, we eclipsed that number, I think, within a year. And as we're speaking today, we've hired over 2,500 veterans and or their spouses in Humana. Yeah, we have been very much involved in various levels. The Humana Foundation contributed over $1 million to the entrepreneurial boot camp for disabled veterans. We've been very much active with AMVETS, and we're very proud to be have a 3-year relationship with the VFW, which through which we've insured 55,000 VFW members through one of our Medicare Advantage plans. So, yeah, we're doing a lot, and we're doing more.
Well, that's a great lead into the topic we wanted to talk about today, Medicare health plans. So who is eligible for Medicare?
Well, the rule of thumb is you think of any individual who's 65 years old or older as being eligible for Medicare. But there are some exceptions to every rule, and there is one to this as well. There are some folks who are younger than 65 that are eligible for Medicare through certain disabilities or perhaps who have been receiving disability income for about 24, 25 months.
Okay, and so what's the best way to choose a Medicare plan?
You know, the most difficult part of this, Dale, is whether or not you can spell Medicare. If you have a personal computer at home, I advise people to go to www.medicare.gov. And there's some folks that says, yeah, I don't have a computer. Well, how about your phone? In that case, just call 1-800-MEDICARE. And basically, you start with your zip code. Once you get into either the website or on the phone, they're going to ask for your zip code, and you're going to find all the plans that are available to you where you live. Sort through it, look at them, decide, you know, what plans seem to be good for you, what plans fit your needs and desires, and then do a deeper dive. Go to the actual website of the insurance company that is providing that plan, like Humana.com, for an example, and do a little bit more deeper research onto those plans that interest you.
Well, I'm interested in finding out, what is the difference between the original Medicare and these Medicare Advantage plans?
I'm going to go one better. I'm going to start with just Medicare. You know, when we were young, and we were young ones.
That's true.
We went to school, at least I was. We went to school to learn our ABCs, Well, with Medicare, you have to learn your A, B, C's, and D's. And that's where you start with Medicare. There's four parts to it. There's Part A, there's Part B, Part C, Part D.
Okay.
All right. You take Part A and Part B. Part A, most of us are entitled to after we retire. We've earned it through working, or perhaps you've been married to somebody who has worked 10 years or so. They paid into the system. So Part A, which is hospitalization, most people are entitled to when they retire. Part B covers pretty much all of that Part A doesn't. It covers your doctor's office visits, your preventive care visits, your checkups, things like that. This Part A and Part B together is original Medicare. That's your Medicare, that's your parents' Medicare, that's your grandparents' Medicare. It started back in 1965. That is original Medicare, Part A and Part B together, and it is administered by the federal government. You don't pay generally for Part A, but you do pay a premium for Part B. All right, back in the 1990s, they thought people wanted a choice. So Part C came along, and C, if you think of C standing for choice, it makes it a little bit easier. But Part C is a Medicare Advantage plan. It's part of Medicare. It's just a different way of getting your Medicare benefits. That plan is administered by private companies like Humana, for an example. And it's called a Medicare Advantage plan because it has to have all the coverage of basic Medicare, your original Medicare, has to cover the same things. But these plans usually have a little extra coverage. There may be some routine coverage for dental, for vision. There may be discounted services for hearing aids and things like that. There may even be prescription drug coverage included in these Part C Medicare Advantage plans. So that's what Medicare is. Original Medicare is Part A and B. Medicare Advantage plan is Part C, and you usually pay an extra premium for that Part C. And I did mention Part D, so I'm going to just touch upon that. D stands for drugs, your prescription drugs. If you are looking to purchase a prescription drug plan through Medicare, you have to do it through a private insurer like Humana, and you can do it one of two ways. You can either purchase a standalone prescription drug plan, Part D, or you can get your prescription drug coverage in many of the Medicare Advantage Part C plans.
Okay, because one of the questions I have is, you know, what are the best ways to determine whether a Medicare plan covers certain prescription drugs?
You know, first of all, this is a complex topic that we're talking about, and I'm giving you just a high-level overview here. There's two ways of getting prescription drug coverage through Medicare, and one of those is, as I mentioned, through a Medicare Advantage plan. Anybody that is selling a Medicare Advantage plan to an individual can answer that question. You know, does this plan have prescription drug coverage? They can tell you, yes, it does. No, it doesn't. The other way is through a prescription drug plan standalone, like the Part D plan that I mentioned.
Okay.
Those do cover. One thing I do want to throw out, understand that all prescription drug plans are different. And some drug plans cover certain prescription drugs, others cover other prescription drugs, and they may cover them at different costs. You have to do a little bit of your homework, but you can find out if the drugs that you use, your prescription drugs that you use, are in the plan you choose by just asking professionals either at the insurance company that you're looking at or perhaps an insurance professional in your community.
Okay. Well, why don't we just choose the lowest cost plan then?
Because there's a little bit more involved in that. You have to know things about deductibles and copayments. Deductibles, that's what comes out of your pocket. That's what you pay out of your pocket before a plan starts to pay their share. And those deductibles may be different from plan to plan. So you got to look at that. You got to look at the copayments. Some insurance plans you may have a $5 copayment for this service. Other plans may have a $10 copay for certain services or the same services. So you got to look at what's behind the plan itself. A general rule of thumb, and believe me, there are exceptions to every rule, but a general rule of thumb is the lower the premium for a plan, generally the higher the deductibles and the copayments will be. In other words, you pay either on the front end or the back end. And the reverse is true. The more you pay for a plan, the more the premium is, generally, the lower the deductibles or the copays.
Okay, got that. So beside premium, copays, provider network, are there other things I should be looking for?
Absolutely. I mean, you do it for a car when you shop for a car. So you want to make sure that what you need, your basic services as well as other services are covered by the plan that you're looking at. I often say make sure, you know, what you're choosing is what you're going to be using. So you got to do a little bit of homework on your own. But understand that all plans are created differently. And some plans cover certain things while others don't. There's one other point that I want to make here, and that is there are certain plans out there. You may have a certain condition, a health condition. Perhaps it's diabetes. Perhaps it's chronic heart failure. Perhaps it's cardiovascular disease. You need certain medicines and certain services and procedures because of that condition. There are actually Medicare Advantage plans out there, not in all communities, not at all times, but you got to ask these questions. There are certain Medicare Advantage plans out there that are specialized to some of these conditions that provide you a little bit more help with the condition that you have. You don't know until you ask, and that's what I'm saying here. If you come away with nothing else today here, Dale, that's what I'm saying, ask questions.
Oh, absolutely. So where can people go for more information, Ken?
Very good. We're going to come kind of full circle on this. First thing I say, go online, Medicare.gov, phone 1-800-MEDICARE. Find some plans that you think suit your needs. Then go to the actual websites of those organizations and do a little deeper research into those plans and see what added values there might be that will suit your needs or perhaps won't. But the other thing I'm going to say, too, is there's also the personal touch. There are professional insurance individuals in your community that you can reach out to. And remember, for the veterans, you have the VA and you have VSOs. Utilize all avenues to get answers to your questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. Well, we've been talking with Ken Schultz of Humana Insurance today, and I think we've answered a whole lot of questions about Medicare. And if you have any more questions, of course, you go to Medicare.gov, and you'll find a lot more information, or check with a professional agent. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. And again, Dale, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you on this really difficult topic today.
It is. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio.
I enjoy it. Have a good day.
You too.
Once again, we come to the end to our Veterans Radio program for today, and it's the last program of 2015. We're going to be welcoming the new year coming up at the end of the month. End of the month, what? Oh, Lord, what a day today. Yes, at the end of the week, that's what we want to say. So we're all going to be seeing you next year. But in the meantime, you all may want to go to thelifechest.com, thelifechest.com, and check out all the styles they have to offer for you. There's 50% off on all Life Chest. And until next week, you are dismissed.